And on the line now, I have Jennifer Gargan, who is Director of EPIC, Empowering People in Care. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, John. How are you?
I'm great, and thanks very much for taking the call.
You're now, very welcome.
We're going to talk about a report, Child Protection and Welfare Concerns, highlighted in North Dublin. But before that, just tell the listeners a bit about EPIC.
EPIC is an organisation that was set up specifically to give a voice to children in care and those with care experience, to make sure that their rights were promoted and basically that they had a say in what decisions were made about them, and that these decisions were taken into account, their views were taken into account when decisions were made, and that they would impact on changes for the better in policy and practice within the care system. That's very briefly what we do. So we provide a one-to-one individual advocacy service for children and young people who are in care now at the moment or who have been in care at any time during their lives.
Okay, and it's great work, and it's very necessary work, unfortunately, that you're doing. Just tell us about this inspection. It was published by HICWA.
That's right, yes.
And it identifies one of the points, delays in notification made by TUSLA to Gardaí. That's quite.
Well, that's one of the points. I mean, there's a number of points made in this report. I suppose one of the things they highlighted was the systems weren't safe or effective in managing risk to all adults of concern, and that's where you're talking about the Gardaí in relation to retrospective referrals about child abuse. There was very little evidence that children were routinely asked to be part of interviews when the assessment was being made, or their families as well. And I suppose The one of the things that again is highlighted is the lack of social workers, and that as a consequence of this, there's delays in, as you said, notifying the Gardaí, but also delays in allocation of social workers, and there's waiting lists, and also there's a number of referrals, over 2,300 referrals waiting for assessment.
All right, and there's another point you make here. Compliance with some elements of the Children First Guidance. Just explain to us about Children's First Guidance.
Well, Children First Guidance is a document which is brought out a few years ago, a reviewed and updated version of one that's been around for many years, which lays out what the responsibilities of everybody is in relation to child protection concerns, what people must do, and it shows that everybody has a responsibility, and that includes teachers and people who are working with children, including social workers and doctors and people like that. So there's responsibilities for people to refer their concerns in relation to social work professionals working with young people. And I suppose there's also a responsibility on the general public and ourselves and anybody who has a concern about a child to notify somebody in authority that their concerns should be taken into account and that should be investigated.
Okay, now when we talk about children in care, are we talking about institutions, or are we talking about people in families, or both?
We're talking about all children in care, and that means that they are in the care of the state. So we are talking specifically around the 6,400 children who are currently in care in the country. 6,000 of those are in care with either their own families, extended families, in relative care, and the balance of those, which is about 4,000 and a bit, are in care with general foster carers who have been recruited by TUSLA to care for children within their own families. And there's about 350-400 young people at any given time in community-based residential centres. We don't call them institutions because they're small family-like homes with 3-4 children, 5 children maybe. So it covers the whole spectrum of children in care.
Okay, now one of the things here as well is that there was positives in this, and the positive in this report identified that early interventions had benefits for children and their families. Are these early interventions happening, Jennifer?
Well, I suppose they are happening, and there's a very good program called METAL now where children are... Well, I suppose what happens, it's safe to say, what happens is when a referral comes into the Child Protection or Welfare Services, they're assessed on basis of and prioritised on the basis of the risk to the child. So if it's a welfare concern, a low-ish level concern, that doesn't mean it isn't of concern. It just means not an immediate risk, a child protection risk to the child. So, for example, if a child is is not going to school, maybe they're a bit neglected, something like that. It's not a huge level of concern. The family is referred to a locally based family support service or similar intervention in order to address those issues. There, what happens is happening now within this, the high risk, those who are considered to be high risk are being addressed immediately, and those who are less at risk are not being addressed immediately. So that causes a knock-on effect throughout the system. So basically what's happening is firefighting. There aren't enough resources, enough social workers, enough people working in the system to take on board and investigate and assess all referrals made to the service. And that's where the problems lie. Because a low risk today can escalate into a high risk or a higher risk next week or next month. So when your back is turned, if you like, when those cases aren't being supported and addressed and the issues of concern, you know, being dealt with, then those can escalate.
Okay, so what you're saying is there's priority given to people who are high priority, and as you say, low risk cases can turn into serious cases.
They can if they're not allocated. So, for example, during the year of this report, there was nearly 3,800 referrals made in 12 months, and 2,300 of those required initial assessment. 1,249 were completed, but only 146 were completed within the statutory 20-day requirement. So what we're seeing here is that a lot of those have not had the ongoing further assessment. So anything can happen in that time. So what the concern would always be is that a child could be exposed to further risk or harm during that period, and nobody might know, or they might be left sort of sitting on a waiting list somewhere while that was happening.
And
that's really down to resources. It's down simply to the fact that there aren't enough social workers, there aren't enough people to do the assessments, and therefore the system has to prioritise those. I mean, it's like going into A&E with a heart attack versus going in with a sprained ankle. Do you know what I mean? That's what you have to do. But of course, the person with the sprained ankle sitting on a trolley, or the child with the lower risk, could be left sitting there and something else could happen.
And how long would that waiting... How long would that waiting list be for children on medium or low risk?
Now, do you know what, John? I can't remember because it's a while since I read this report, but it could be considerable time. It could be months. In some cases, I think they were maybe a year on the waiting list.
That's terrible.
So, it is, but that is the reality of the times we're living in. I mean, it's a fact that Tulsa does not have the resources and has not been given sufficient resources to employ enough social workers. And in fairness to Tulsa, they have made huge strides in improving their systems and their services. But, you know, they cannot achieve everything. They are working very, very hard to do their best, but really and truly, while the system is not... You know, it's not perfect, but we do need to make sure that they have the resources that they need to do their job properly.
And who finances Tulsa? Is it
Tulsa is paid out of the exchequer. So basically, you know, it's the government makes decisions and the Department of Finance makes decisions. And each year when the budgets go in from all the departments. And ultimately, I suppose, in the case of Tulsa, it's up to the Department of Children and Youth Affairs and the minister there to make sure that is a priority when it goes to government.
So are the finances getting smaller as the years go on?
John, what's happened is we now have more children than ever.
Yep.
There's a greater awareness of the issues of risk and harm and neglect to children and child protection concerns. So, I mean, last year, I think there was over 40,000 referrals to Tulsa. Like, that's a lot of referrals, and they all have to be dealt with. They have to be assessed. They have to be decided whether they're low priority, as I talked to you about, or whether they're higher priority and need immediate social work attention, or whether they can go on a waiting list for further assessment. Or whether they are allocated, you know, to the community where they're low risk. And so that's the situation. And 40,000 referrals, it takes a lot of social workers to go through all of those and decide what the issue is and what needs to be dealt with immediately and so on. And it takes skills and training to be able to do that.
Yeah, no, I've spoken to you before, Jennifer, and I also speak to the Children's Rights Alliance. And I can't believe that in this day and age we're still talking about our children, you know, being put at risk because of lack of finances. It's
It's hard to believe, but the reality of life over the last number of years, John, is that everything was cut to the bone. And, you know, in some ways, you know, everybody has suffered. But I agree with you. I think if our government is genuinely sincere in what they've said, that, you know, every child should be cherished equally, then I think they need to make those resources available. And they also need to put more resources into the early intervention. Now, there is money being put into that, but it needs to be put in over a period of years, a generation. You know, they need to say, we're going to focus on this for the next 20 years. Because otherwise you've got a whole generation of children then that will come through that system and will be better adults, better parents, and, you know, better able to cope with things. So it's a long-term investment, and that's what it is, an investment in the future of our children and of our families.
Okay, and you do education for parents to sort of show them how to be better parents and stuff like that?
No, we don't. But actually, we're hoping over the next while that we will be able to provide. We provide a lot of support to young people, and we link them into other services when they themselves are parents, are becoming parents. And sadly, you know, our aim is to break that cycle of care into the next generation. And sadly, we see a good number of cases every year where young people who have been in care themselves, their children are now being taken into care. And I suppose that is the saddest thing of all. And it's something that it really needs to be addressed. And there needs to be a huge investment in prevention and early intervention to achieve that, and in educating parents and educating communities, and in providing, you know, parenting support to young people as they go through school even. You know, because and young people who've been in care don't always have the experience of being in a stable and loving family. So it's very difficult for them to have a role model and know how to be good parents themselves and what that requires. And many of them become parents quite young, and many of them are parenting on their own. So it's very difficult. And so they need every support they can get in order to break that cycle into the next generation.
And would you say austerity now has made parenting much harder lately?
Well, you know, I'm a parent myself. I have three children. They're all adults now, but it is the hardest job any of us will ever do. Yep. And really, we do it instinctively based on what our experiences has been. And if you add in poverty and other stresses, mortgages, loss of jobs and all of that, of course that's going to add stress in families and make things more difficult. And there's a lot more children living in poverty now than there was 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years ago. And that is a reality. And of course it's more difficult, and it puts stress on parents, and it makes it more difficult. And families that are already struggling are going to be harder hit. And then there's not, because of cutbacks in other areas, there aren't the resources for people if they're suffering from depression, mental health problems, if they're suffering from anxiety or any of those things, that they can't always get the help they need, or they're waiting list, they don't get it in time. So it becomes, you know, sort of a cycle. So, of course, there's a knock-on effect throughout our society. And I do think that does have an added difficulty in terms of the welfare and protection of children.
It's terrible. It doesn't bear thinking about. I just want to go back to the beginning of our conversation. This was highlighted in North Dublin.
Yes.
Was this report just based in North Dublin?
Well, this particular one was in particular areas in North Dublin, and what happens with HICWA is they do inspections in different areas. I don't know how they decide where they're going to do them, but they decide that they're going to do inspections in different areas each year. And they relatively new, these inspections of child protection and welfare services. Prior to that, they were looking at sort of foster care and residential care, and that was where the focus was, but it has moved more into child protection because of all the reports we've had and the failings we've seen in the past in terms of child protection. And I do think it's important to note that there has been an improvement, and there are very good procedures in place, but again, if people are working under, you know, severe pressure, they're not going to be able to do everything, and therefore there are going to be some failures within that.
Okay, and who has to act now on this report? Like, what can our listeners do? There's going to be people knocking on our doors and they want to be elected. What department should act on this report? And
well, really, I suppose TUSLA ultimately is responsible for delivering the safe and quality assured services to children and young people. I suppose that, you know, everybody has who's working in this area, particularly those who are working in child protection, and particularly those working in community-based, you know, family support and parenting programs, we all have responsibility to support people and provide them with the family support. Is really, really important for people when they're going through difficulties. But I think it's also important that early concerns of abuse or neglect or child welfare concerns are dealt with. So therefore it's important they are reported and that people get help at an early stage, because the longer children are left in these situations, neglect, for example, long-term neglect is very insidious and has a long-term, very negative effect on outcomes for children. So I suppose it's important to say that you know, everybody has a responsibility here to support parents. Everybody's working in the community, you know, teachers and local support groups and whatever. But all of these groups in the community have been affected by cutbacks over the years, as I said earlier. So, you know, it is difficult to know. But ultimately, I think that the government has responsibility for ensuring the safety of our children in terms of child protection. And ultimately, they are the ones who need to provide the resources to TUSLA to enable them to do their job to the best and highest standards.
Okay, so somebody out there now, Jennifer, is suspicious of that somebody might be, some child might be being neglected or in an abusive situation. How do they go about reporting that?
Well, the first thing you can do is you can go onto the TUSLA website and you can look up your local social work office and you can make a phone call to somebody there. And they will tell you how to do it. And if you're professional and you have a designated child protection officer within your organisation, then you can report that to that person and they will make a written report to TUSLA. I think it's important that people do make sure that any reports that are of concern are passed on to the relevant people. But I do think it's also important that people don't make reports that are unfounded. So you must be sure that you have a concern. But if you have, I think it's very important that it's passed on and reported.
Okay, Jennifer, thank you very much for taking the call. The clock has beaten us again. I can't say it's always nice talking to you, because I'd rather that we didn't have to talk about these situations, but unfortunately we do. So thank you very much for taking my call. Is there anything now you'd like to add?
Well, I suppose what I would like to add is that if anybody out there is a person who has been in care or has a child in care that they're concerned about, that needs support or advocacy support, they can contact EPIC, and we have advocacy officers who will represent and speak on behalf of the child and meet with the child or young person. And they can contact us at info@epiconline.ie or 01872761, or if they Google EPIC plus children in care, they will find us on the internet.
So that's 8727661. Listen, thanks very much for taking the call again, Jennifer.
Not at all, John. I hope it was of help to you, and I hope some of your listeners may find that they, if they need that support, or if they're a person who has been in care or their child in care themselves, that they can contact us.
And I'll give out those numbers and the website again before the end of the show. Thank you, Jennifer. We'll talk
again.
Thank
you very much, John.
Thank you.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.